portion of our task force meeting. I am pleased to report that having heard most of the breakout sessions, I know for a fact, I can attest to the fact that nobody wandered away, nobody left the building. There was a lot of good hard work that occurred, and I'm grateful for that. We are now going to go straight into the report outs from the subcommittees. A few points to note. We did ask you to bear in mind that this was not meant to be a process of saying, are we going to demote any of the language access strategic plan recommendations? All of them are important, but rather the question was, which ones are we going to put on our list of priorities for this year? And that particularly focuses on the short to medium term agenda. What can be achieved this year, or what do you believe should be started this year? I do want to note that we will be very happy to have members of the task force who are not on a particular subcommittee but still have views about it to send their views to the co-chairs or chair of that subcommittee. That's very important and useful, and I know that we will have some of that. If we do have time in the course of this report out, we might have some opportunity for just a few questions. But that deliberation between the task force and the subcommittees will continue, and we will take reports from either the chair or co-chair of the subcommittees, or if they've designated somebody else, that will work just fine as well. So with that, let me turn it over to the Budget and LEP Monitoring Subcommittee.
Great. Let's see. I have my – where's my list? It was up there. Now somebody's on top of it. Oh, on that side. I didn't write anything. I just put numbers. So it's a little hard to see the code system, but we went through and had the most interesting part of the whole day was just listening to everyone and the talent that was on our group. Made me really excited about the prospects of what's going to happen in this group. Because of the fact that people that are here know what they're talking about, they come at things from different perspectives too. We had a very robust discussion on just about every topic. It's funny, having lived through the creation of the plan, to see people talking about each of the recommendations and the practical ramifications of those for the trial courts and other places. It was, I enjoyed it quite a bit. So thank you for those that were on my group. We came up with some, my favorite of our group, so you have our chart there. We figured out we may have been the only one that's already achieved one, and that's recommendation number 60. That was the creation of the implementation task force.
I was a little concerned that you might say that that's not important and we should not do that.
So we put that in a separate category up here, the 60. But, one has been achieved. If you go through the plan, I think there's been more than one that may have been achieved now, but that one was. When we rated them all, we decided that the important things for us to get out right away were very kind of clear, I think to a certain degree, 8, which was the expansion of court interpreters to all civil proceedings. That recommendation was really the one that we didn't really need a lot of discussion between the members to know that that was something that we viewed as an A or a priority one item, something that we're going to be working on in our subcommittee this year. See to it that could happen. Identified that if we did, hopefully the budget change proposal that's being considered would be successful. There would be augmentation to 45-45 money. Again, that would be for next year. This year, we still have some surplus money, so things can be done, and things are being done right now with some of that money to expand those services, and we should encourage that and continue that as a really top priority for our group. We had also on ours, recommendation number 6, and then 56 and 57 on our list, they're all sort of interrelated, having to do with data collection, data interpretation, seeing what we could do, whether we needed new sources of data to be requested, and design those kind of models, templates as to what would need to be requested. And we kind of came away, our initial discussion anyway, was a thought that many of the processes that are currently in place could give us data that we would need in order to go and ask for funds to say, this is actually on the ground. We could see that at relatively low cost. We could come up through various systems. The Phoenix system was thought up as a possible place we could do it. We could do some tweaks on reporting at the local level that wouldn't be all that time-consuming or expensive. We might be able to come up with a great deal of data that we are not looking at now. It was great to have Zlatko, Stephen, and Lucy here, because their familiarity with that, those kind of things will be essential. And the thought that maybe right away we could go into figuring out ways as a one-year priority to get this done, to have a system in place so by this time next year, we're going to have some good information and data based on almost very little modification of existing systems to be able to show the need, which is utmost priority. Let's see, what else was a big priority? 25, which is designation of language access representatives. We felt that if individual courts didn't have somebody who at least on, you know, one of their many hats was language access coordinator or the language access person in that court, the one who would have knowledge of all the services, would have knowledge of where to go. If somebody had a problem, they'd go to that person. That was essential. And it would work well into the budget change proposal where we're going to have the regional language access coordinators. Hopefully that'll get funded. And we'll be able to have that in place by next year, and it'll feed right into that system. In order for the data collection and for the other things, the monitoring part of this, to take place, you're going to need to have that person as a point of contact in each of the individual courts. So we thought that was important to put on our first-year priority. What else? 62 and 63 were also identified as being important because they were relatively easy, we'd say, in which means it probably won't be, but we thought that it was development of a complaint form that could be used by individual courts. LA's already developed one. It's up on their website. We might be able to tweak that and come up with it. That was the recommendation for 62. Also to come up with a complaint process for the trial courts to use, maybe a model. Each court's going to be a little bit different, but we should be able to get to that and do something with that in the first year. 67 was adoption of the plan by the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court. The plan itself was more meant as a trial court document, and so we think that we can either adjust through the LEP that each of the appellate courts and the Supreme Court have, an LEP plan. Now we might be able to just tweak it a little bit, add some of the recommendations that are applicable to them, and come up with a plan for them as well. So that's something that could be achievable in a year. On the B was priority two. We viewed those in kind of two different ways, things that may take a little longer than just the year. Things are going to have some impediments for us to getting them done right away. And one of those was 10, recommendation number 10, and that was the provision of qualified interpreters in all court-ordered or court-operated proceedings. That would be like at the mediator's office, the facilitator, self-help that's operated within the court, those type of services. Those are all very important places where actually the majority of the public has contact or need of the court services. At the same time, it's difficult for us to start really getting into that without figuring out what level of qualification we're going to have for places that are not inside the courtroom, whether it's going to be certified or a registered interpreter or at some other kind of qualification in non-court, inside the courtroom kind of areas. We had a lot of discussion of this when we were developing the language access plan, and that's going to need to be kind of hashed out, and it's going to take a while for us to really get into that. So without minimizing the importance of this, maybe we put that into the B category and not view it as the top priority for us to get done in 1 year, but work it towards it getting done over the course of time. Let's see, we had 28, which was recruitment of bilingual staff. That's another one that's going to take some monitoring. We had a great discussion on how to recognize how many are out there right now and whether or not we're going to be able to do that easily. Perhaps compiling what the policies are in each of the courts would be important to know whether they do pay differential, whether they do other things, where they are, what the needs are in the local courts. That this might take a little while to get really into. And it may need some HR
assistance. We may need somebody who is an HR specialist. I mean, the CEOs would be able to help with that. But at the very least, Scott Gardner or somebody else who's here at Office of General Counsel that specializes in those areas. It would be good for us to do, because we had a discussion about what level of importance you can place on that from a legal standpoint as opposed to other employees. And there are some technical aspects of that that I think it's going to take us a while to develop. So we put that down a little bit, even though we don't want to say it's less important. We just move it into another category. And item 61, is that one? That's the monitoring systems. We really thought that we weren't going to be able to put the monitoring systems in place until after we have the 12 language access regional coordinators that are going to be in place, because it will be kind of channeled through them to a certain degree. The monitoring, I think, is something that we would have to have a point of contact person to do it effectively. We could start working on some of the things that we would like to monitor, but I don't know whether or not we could really push forward with that in a one-year thing. So we put that at a secondary level. We also thought that the term compliance and monitoring system that was used in that recommendation may not be the best term. So we're going to try to look for something else. Compliance sometimes has negative connotations, especially at the trial court level. I say now as a PJ. So so maybe we could change that to be a little less harsh sounding. I think monitoring is a great term, so we may look at just legal monitoring or call it something, monitoring it something else, just to make sure people are educated, knowledgeable about what we're trying to do, knowledgeable what the expectations are, and move forward from there. So that we put that on there. And then what else, 58, 59, that is pursuit by courts of other funding opportunities and pursuit by the council of other funding opportunities. Those are both kind of difficult to do at this stage. We were thinking, and we gave it a little less priority. I know when we developed the plan, it was hard for us. We kind of had that in there, but we weren't aware of who could do that. As I understand it, we learned from Diane, there's no grant person here at the AOC any longer. There's no AOC any longer by that matter. But there's no grant person here to look to head that up. So we thought maybe we could put this off a little bit, or maybe that's a lower priority. So that's what we did.
Thank you, Judge Austin. We have maybe time for one or two very brief questions if anybody has any. As I said, you'll hear much more about the budget as we go. Thank you so much. Technological solutions.
I'm afraid I don't have the flip chart or post-it, but let me address first the ones that we considered to be lower priority, or at least not lower priority, but had less prospect of being able to do make substantial progress on in the coming year. And those are recommendations 1, 2, and 3. 1 is language access needs identification. Number 2 is request for language services. Number 3 is protocol for justice partners to communicate language needs. Those all are items that have potentially significant long-term costs, to the extent that they seek to integrate those items with existing case management systems. The reality is that we will continue to have multiple case management systems in this state for the foreseeable future, with one or two large vendors and a multitude of older systems that really have no capability to provide the integration for language services that is contemplated here. But certainly, there is an opportunity now, because there are a number of courts that are going to implement new case management systems or are implementing them now. One large vendor that has the majority of the courts that are implementing modern case management systems. We are in regular communication with that vendor. I think the consensus was that rather than try and work with multiple vendors, we have an opportunity to work with that largest vendor to, one, identify the programming requirements to be able to include identification of need for language access services and perhaps to track and manage those services. Within the next year, we certainly can not only initiate those communications with the vendor, but identify what the programming costs would be, the level of effort required to implement them, and the timeline to do that. Now, once we do that, there certainly will be a funding element required for that, and whether that would be appropriate at the local court level or at the branch level is something that would require some further discussion. But at least we can identify what level of effort and what costs would be involved. We also discussed generally in terms of requests for language services whether we can't use the templates developed by the Judicial Council for local websites to include an e-business or request for language access services component so that the LEP could request services using the court's website. Again, that's something that we could do and develop with little or no cost. The other items on our agenda, numbers 12 through 16, really deal with remote video interpreting, recognizing the preference for in-person interpreters. Where do we look to implementing or using technology to use VRI? We actually think that there is a real possibility to implement the pilot project contemplated by the language access plan within the next 12 months at little or no cost to the court. There are vendors that are willing or interested in providing those services to the court. We anticipate that we can prepare a request for proposal within the next 3 months, relying or using a lot of the work that's already been done by the National Center of State Courts and the Conference of State Court Administrators to get that RFP out and to have a vendor identified and hopefully selected within an additional 90 days and potentially be able to identify the courts, at least two courts, to participate in the pilot project and to have at least the hardware phase of this implemented within a total of 9 months. So we think it is possible to get a pilot project up and running in at least two courts within the next 12 months at little or no cost to the court. And that's our number one priority.
Great. Thank you very much, Justice Berniers. Any quick questions for Justice Berniers? Okay, moving right along, translation, signage, and tools for courts.
Thank you.
I'm
sorry. I do have a question. Is the focus to try to RFP courts that have regional and transportational limitations, making VRI, therefore, a more necessary technology? Is that the focus, or is it going to be open across the state?
Well, in terms of selecting the courts to participate, I think there are a number of factors that we're going to have to consider, including courts that have the local IT support to manage the project. So, we've talked to a couple courts that CTAC has already. We certainly have not precluded any court from participating, but we have to look at what the existing infrastructure is within the courts to support it and what level of IT support the local court can provide.
Justice.
Okay. We began our discussion by really asking what is signage, because signage is different for people who have a language that has a written alphabet. It's different for people who are both hearing impaired and visually impaired. And so it is not just a matter of slapping things on the wall. And so that's where we started. But in terms of our priorities, our number one priority actually encompasses a number of the recommendations that were given to us. And that is to create what we, I think, called a living toolkit, which is rather than a static document, a meaningful site on the web to which courts and litigants and advocates would have access, so probably not on Serranus, that would bring together resources as diverse as I Speak cards, which local courts could then print out in the languages that they needed, signs for vacations and other things in appropriate languages, and templates and other things. So what we are talking about would really encompass number four, which is mechanisms for LEP persons to self-identify, putting resources for the courts to use to help them do that. Number five, which is information for court services about availability, court users for about availability. Item 37, which is samples and templates. This is an ongoing project. We think a great deal of it can be done, and the initial site can be established and designed in the first year. But as resources become available to do things such as develop templates and forms, that those can then be fed into the site, which will be a living and expanding site over the time. Also included in this would be number 52, which is bench cards on language access. On this point, we would foresee working with CEJR to talk about the development and proper material for bench cards. We also, on this and a couple of other areas, will look to work with the education subcommittee to make sure that our works are complementary and not duplicative on some of these issues. So that is our number one priority, and would suggest that go on the work plan as a number one priority. Our number two priority has to do with translation, and the primary issue there is recommendation number 36, which is the creation of a translation committee by the Judicial Council. We think that work needs to be done to identify what the composition of that committee ideally should be. And what issues they should consider in developing protocols and forms, and believe that within the year we can develop those recommendations. We hope to enlist the services of some translators in helping us to develop the outlines of what that committee should be. But we think, although that is a number two priority, we can complete the design piece of that in the first year. That would also cover number 38, which is posting of translations on the web and translation of court orders, because that would all be material that would be designed by that translation committee. Our last item and our number three priority is the use of volunteers, volunteers in such matters as court ambassadors, as some courts already have, which greet people at the entrance and help guide them to services in the court. Other uses of volunteers, we feel quite strongly that volunteers without standards can lead to great mischief, that people can be given misinformation inadvertently. People who are not skilled in translating and interpreting can give people really bad information. And so we think that the development of model programs and best practices is a very important step before volunteers are put into place. We did talk about the idea of using, hopefully getting a little bit of grant money to do a couple of pilot projects on the use of volunteers, and using the experience of those pilot programs to develop best practices and model procedures. But even without that money being available, work on developing best practices and rules for training could go forward. So that's our report.
Thank you. Any brief questions? So one quick question from here would be this last point you made about volunteers certainly makes a lot of sense to recognize that standards are crucial. How much of that work of developing the right standards do you think is going to be publicizing, disseminating, best practices that are already in place in some counties, and how much of it is going to be the subcommittee developing standards itself?
I think a little bit of both. For example, the courts that have Justice Corps volunteers already have a lot of information about bilingual non-lawyers giving information, and that can help us with best practices. There are also courts who are using greeters at the courthouse door who can help us with talking about training. So I think there is material out there we can draw from. But I think when you get into language, you have particular issues with competency, both cultural competency and language competency, that we don't have a lot of people using right now that we need to develop.
Thank you. Education.
Yes. We had 11 recommendations that we reviewed, and we identified 6 of those as priorities, but we did not rank them. We ran out of time, as you saw. So the first of those would be related to multilingual videos. That's number 18, which is continuing to create multilingual standardized videos for high-volume type cases that lend themselves to generalized legal information. What we would start out doing this year would be a survey to find out what's out there and what the need is. We talked about, for example, using them in small claims, traffic, UD, family, DV, arraignments. We thought that we would survey the Judicial Council Advisory Committees, the CJR Curriculum Committees, nonprofits, legal services to find out what would be best. We also talked about ensuring that those are generalized enough that they don't need to be continually updated and that they're able to be shared with a broad audience rather than specifically. And so that would just start out with a survey, but the actual production would require significant funding. There is a BCP apparently in the works for funding videos for 2016-2017. We identified 3 priorities relating to interpreters. That was numbers 19, verifying the credentials of interpreters that are appointed, that they properly represent their credentials on the record, that they are qualified, and they have their oaths on file. And number 22 is, except when there are exigent circumstances, ensuring that there's no conflict of interest with the interpreters, and then ensuring that minors are not interpreting. We believe that we can do these by the end of the year. We are considering doing something like a bench card, something along the lines of this that every judicial officer would get that tells them what they do in this circumstance, what they shouldn't do, and gives them a somewhat of a checklist, and then it would be accompanied by some education that would also be developed. Number 45 is training for prospective interpreters. Again, this would be a survey. We saw this as a very significant need. A high priority is to determine what we can do to start recruiting more people and then ensuring more of them are able to successfully pass all the testing and be working in the courts. But it is going to require significant time to be coordinating with the programs that are out there, the colleges that do the training, the interpreter groups, to figure out what the needs are and how we can best reach those groups. With regard to bilingual staff, we identified number 26, which is identifying critical points of contact, so where the LEP court users come into contact with court personnel outside of the courtroom, for example, self-help, when they're paying their bills. And we decided, again, that we really need to know what the courts identify as where those critical points of contact are, so we see that as a service. And then also, very specifically, what level of service needs to be provided at that point of contact, because it's very different if you're simply taking money as opposed to you're helping someone fill out forms, you're trying to explain court processes. And after we get that information, which we believe we can do this year, then we could address the language proficiency standards for bilingual staff and training. And then the last one we thought we could at least start this year and make some perhaps significant inroads would be judicial branch training regarding the language access plans. We looked at those. We think we can work with CJR and get much of that put together. There will need to be funding for some of it, but we think we can do at least a good first step this year.
Thank you. Any brief questions for the Education Subcommittee? I am grateful for all the good work that has happened. I will tell you that I'm both impressed and delighted, as well as aware of how daunting it is, because I've been trying to keep up with the list that keeps growing longer and longer, which is what we expected. I do think maybe next time we'll give you 15 minutes instead of 2 hours, but this is what we wanted, and we have our work cut out for us. We have a lot of homework. Just to give you a brief little preview before turning it over to Judge Covarrubias to close, part of what we will try to do in the next few weeks will be two crucial pieces here. One will be our staff, and Judge Covarrubias and I will be following up with the subcommittee chairs and co-chairs to take all this subcommittee by subcommittee and get an even better and more nuanced sense of the agenda that you've laid out, ask further questions, get a sense of where the heavy lifts are going to be, start aligning staff-related resources to make sure that the subcommittees have what they need to get this done. The other key piece is going to be trying to assemble this into a sort of yearly work plan that makes it all coherent, tries to provide some of the connective tissue, tries to highlight where there are some connections. Just in listening to the last two subcommittees, for example, in terms of volunteers, staff, obviously very different in some respects, but I can imagine some synergies there. The CEJR piece also comes to mind. Obviously, some of these things will feed back into the budget and monitoring. So we'll be giving attention to that to try to put it in a coherent form that can then be presented back to the Judicial Council. I'm grateful. I'm incredibly enthusiastic, and I look forward to working with you for a long time, but not too long. Judge.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all the members of the task force for a very, very productive meeting. This work that we are all doing is going to have a very significant impact and positive impact on the limited English proficient court users that we are attempting to serve, as they have not been served at least appropriately for many of our thinking. And some of that work is already being done, and we see that already taking place now for some court users as we are expanding out this process. The annual agenda will be submitted to the District Council Executive Planning Committee in early July and will be made public thereafter. The agenda will include the subcommittee's priorities, estimated time frames for completion, a schedule for the upcoming public hearings, and additional in-person task force meetings, so please keep tab of the emails and follow through. As mentioned earlier, we'll be working in the coming months to identify the costs and expenses that will be necessary to gradually implement all of the 75 recommendations of the Language Access Plan that has been adopted. We work collaboratively and continue to do so with our courts, our stakeholders, attempting to be flexible but identifying best practices and take gradual but deliberate steps and concrete steps to make this Language Access Plan a reality. We will continue to ask for your continued help and guidance in doing that. We encourage our subcommittees to make conference calls to work on their assigned recommendations and priority projects, and subcommittee staff will be able to coordinate these efforts with everyone. Our next in-person meeting, which is likely to occur in September or October, will be a community meeting that has been identified. We'll be looking at putting out dates for future meetings as soon as we're able to do so, and on the task force website, encourage you to follow through and, if able, to participate either through public comment or coming to our meetings or listening to our meetings via the web. I'd like to thank especially the Judicial Council staff, who worked tirelessly. They haven't stopped working tirelessly, frankly, because they worked tirelessly through the development of the Language Access Plan. They continue to do so in preparing all the materials and all the logistics for today's meeting, and that including the Court Operations Services and the Court Language Access Support Program. I'd like to thank to all our subcommittee staff who worked closely with the chairs and subcommittee chairs, and will continue to do so over the coming year to develop draft guidelines and work product related to the implementation of this plan for review and the Judicial Council. And especially want to thank Justice Cuellar for his energy. He's brought a renewed energy and sense of urgency to this plan, looking at the Daily Journal and opening it up, I just thought it's priceless to have him on here. So thank you, Justin.
It's very kind, and I'm just very happy to have all of you as my colleagues, and also very happy to say that 17 minutes ahead of schedule, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'll see you tomorrow.